Well, before us in the next hour is a hands-on tool for our tool belts, causing us to slow down in our preparation, and that's this broken, we want to avoid this broken line. And we're going to consider carefully how a passage is organized. So the illustration for structure, which we're going to put on, if you remember, this is our line of exegesis right here. And structure is going to be over here. A hands-on tool for our tool belts. All right, so for the picture, each one of them has a statement and a picture. The illustration for structure begins with pieces. So I'm going to draw these on there, and then with your partner, just spend 30 seconds or so and answer the question, what do these pieces represent? How do they fit together? So just 30 seconds. What did they say? We're totally lost. Okay. Okay, that's good. That was quite a response, you guys. Like the whole room erupted. Okay. Just a couple of answers. What do you think? What do you think? I heard somebody. Oh, come on. It's not that late at night. What does it look like to you? A math equation. Good. Anybody else? Arrows. Okay. Yeah, we're definitely stuck on the math, but that's not, I have good news for you. We're not going there. At least good news for me. All right. So if we put these pieces together. Yeah. You guys are easy. Okay. Okay, so we have a skeleton, okay? And that's our principle. Structure is, every text has a structure, and the structure will reveal an emphasis. So again, every text has a structure. The structure will reveal an emphasis. How does this principle work? We must apprehend how the author has organized the text and let his organizing principle dictate the emphasis of our message. So we first get the bones connected in order, the skeleton of the text, for the body of our message to be healthy. In other words, once we've apprehended the structure, then we find the emphasis the structure reveals, and only then will we see the life of the passage. Well, speaking of life and bones, who knows the name of the substance found in the center of our bones? Bone marrow, great. In our bodies, bone marrow is the cavity in the innermost part of our bones responsible for red blood cells and more. It's this life-giving cavity manufacturing the oxygen-carrying cells the rest of the body needs to sustain life. So many years ago when I was a student nurse, there was a unit in the hospital preferred by one of the oncologists when performing bone marrow aspirations. It was 6 South, and there was one room, I can still remember, 608, where Dr. Sheldon Krasnow would admit his patients. And there were only 2 things in nurses' training that caused me to be lightheaded. An external tap in room 608 was one of them. And there's something you just don't anticipate about watching a needle go into a patient's chest, the sternum, which we would be in here, to withdraw the precious tell-all fluid from the bone marrow cavity. So room 608 saw many pale-faced student nurses looking away. But functioning bone marrow in the human body is necessary for life. I know, and you too might know people who've had a bone marrow transplant, a life-restoring procedure for the patient. Emphasis in scripture is precious too. Just as our human bodies are held up by a skeletal structure, so is a biblical text. The principle of structure is about apprehending the skeletal structure of the text with our X-ray eyes and then taking the next step of locating the life-infused emphasis of the text. Structure will reveal emphasis. Every text has bones. These bones will reveal the emphasis. So let's investigate this process. But before we start looking at example texts, let's talk strategies. This weekend, we're in the Gospels. In the Gospels, there are three text types, which we talk about at the Simeon Trust. In the Gospels, there's a little bit of discourse, which is speech. There's some poetry on and off, but they're mostly narrative. So that's where our focus will be tonight, on finding structure in the text type of narrative. So just keep coming back to the Simeon Trust workshops, and we'll address strategies for structure in those other text types and discourse and poetry as well. So what are some strategies we can use to uncover structure when teaching narrative in the Gospels? I'm asking you guys, give me some ideas. Who's speaking? I'm sorry. Did I hear something? Who is speaking? Okay, so are you talking like characters? Okay, great. Characters. Setting. Good. What was that one?
Plot.
Plot arc. Absolutely. You guys are good. Plot arc. Okay. Anything else? Some general strategies.
Repeated words?
Sure. Yep. Repeated words. How do you find repeated words?
Read.
I know we get tired of hearing and saying that, reading and rereading and reading aloud. It's like they come in a triad or something. But, you know, it's so true. If you don't read and reread, I remember David Jackman saying that from the Proclamation Trust in England when we were first learning this. You know, that is really one of the most important things you can do. So we get tired of putting it up here, but it's really so important. Okay, so we've got some literary features here of character setting, plot arc. Anything else you can think of? You guys are doing great for 7:45.
Conflict
we're going to talk about as part of plot arc. Good.
Contrast,
yeah. So compare and contrast, really good. You guys are hitting them all.
Imperatives.
What do you mean by that?
Command the speaker says, here's what you should do.
Yeah, okay. We can put that over there as some commands, maybe even thesis statements. Okay. Okay, that's really good. I think we've, you know, maybe we can add time to this side over here. These are more the general strategies over here, and things a little more specific to narrative right here. But we pretty much covered it. Well, let's start with how plot arc can help us find the structure and emphasis of a text. So who can share with us what they learned in school about stories and plot, especially our English majors? Oh, I heard setting. Okay, I'm just going to start labeling this. And as we label them, what is setting? Okay, so kind of what's happening with the characters, right? Location. All right. What's the next one?
Conflict.
Okay, what can you tell me about conflict?
Tension.
creates tension. Good.
There's a question that needs answered.
A question needs answering. Good. We don't like conflict, do we? Let me think about it. What else?
A challenge
to make care. Good. Challenge to overcome. It's dramatic, isn't it? It puts a burden on us, the reader. Okay, something needs to be resolved. Good. Okay, how about here at the top of the peak here? Climax. Climax is the turning point, isn't it? The situation needs to change. It's the tipping point of the story. All right, how about the next one? All right, how about resolution? Can anybody kind of wrap that up in a couple words? Answer, okay, solution to the, okay. We can also think of it as the outworking of the climax, the change that was first started in the climax, and where conflict is resolved. Okay. And then how about this last line that I covered up here? New setting. All right, and the new setting really is the new normal. It sets up, keeps the story going, doesn't it? Keeping it moving forward into the next plot. All right, we're going to step out of the Bible for just a minute to hopefully something familiar. Beatrix Potter's Tale of Peter Rabbit, the one with Flopsy, Mopsy, Cottontail, and Farmer McGregor. Do we remember enough about this story? I'm going to set us up with the setting. So Peter is at home. His mom needs to go to the bakery, and she gives him a warning, right, that don't go into Farmer McGregor's garden because your father was caught there, and he was put in a pie, I mean, of all things, right? So they get this warning, your mother's gone. Okay, mom to bakery. All right, what's the conflict? We got our setting.
Temptation.
He goes straight to Farmer McGregor's garden, right? And he gets caught in the fencing, and he loses his little blue jacket, right, with the brass buttons. He gets a tummy ache because he's eaten too many vegetables. So those are really, you know, he's nauseated, and he lost his coat. And, okay, so we get it. So the climax, I'm just going to tell you from my, I think all these stories are a little bit different, but in my book, the climax is Peter is caught in the garden shed. Is that what everybody remembers? And in my book, there's these two huge boots, brown boots of Farmer McGregor, and he is, Peter's in this like sprinkling can, and he sneezes and topples over, and you know, that's kind of the turning point of the story, because that's how he actually gets away. So I'm going to call that the climax with the boots and the sneeze. And then our resolution here would be what? Okay, he escaped. In our new setting, yeah, he's home in bed, drinking chamomile tea while his siblings are out there eating the bakery goods or whatever that his mom brought home. So we've identified the parts of the plot arc, and if we're preschool teachers with a lesson plan devoting a whole week to obedience, we're going to plan to read Peter Rabbit at quiet time. And we want to relay a conclusion to the students. So we've got our skeletal structure, don't we? The parts of the plot arc bring us to an emphasis. So what emphasis is there for our four-year-olds?
Obey your mother.
Good, okay. That's right. I mean, that's what it is, right? You know, there are consequences to not obeying. Choose obedience. Obey your mother. Okay, so I think we got this pretty well explained, even for biology majors like myself. So sometimes it takes a while to be oriented to these things, but plot arc is something we're going to keep working on. So this time we're going to try it in a gospel, Mark's gospel. So with a partner, turn to Mark 4, 35 to 41. And this is the narrative of Jesus calming the storm. So I want you to read with your table partner and then identify the parts of the plot arc. So insert Mark 4, 35 to 41 onto the plot arc. No need to look for emphasis yet, okay? Only plot arc. Spend four minutes or so doing that with your table partner, and then we'll come back together. All right, let's come together. Find out what your findings are. So, what is the setting? Where did you find it? Verses 35 and 36, and what happens there? Okay. They're in a boat. They're what? Okay, they left the crowds behind. Good.
And in the evening.
All those details, right? All right, so that's our setting. How about conflict?
Storm.
What's the tension? Storms, okay. Okay. Jesus is asleep. We have a whole list of things. What else? What's created tension? The water. Okay, the water is going into the boat. Okay, so there's, you know, there's almost drowning. I mean, they're afraid, right? Yeah, she said these are fishermen too, right? Okay. And where'd you find that? What were the verses for conflict?
37 to 38.
Okay, good. Verses 37 to 38. All right, where did you find the climax? And what is the climax? I hear a lot of little voices. I need somebody to speak louder. Okay, 39A I heard. Whoa. All right, can you read for us 39A? Okay. So he spoke, didn't he? He rebuked and spoke. The tipping point or where you cannot go back. So you were trying to see the climax as, say it again. Instead of 39, you were saying the question?
Yes, that's what the issue is.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, like we have 39A. I think surrounding there is okay because it's going to get you to the same, you know, emphasis. So I don't necessarily think I would, that's wrong necessarily. He was in the stern asleep on the cushion. That was what was a problem. And they woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" It would all depend. You know, our plot arcs are kind of, you know, you can have some overlap there. But when Jesus awakes and rebukes the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." He rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." All right, so that's the 39A. Who's the 39B people over there? What are you saying that is? And why is it the resolution? Okay. The storm stopped. Okay, so the action was put into motion of Jesus speaking. So this was really an outworking of the climax when he spoke and rebuked the sea. The storm ended. So do we see how that is the resolution there? Okay. In 39B. Okay, how about the new setting? So they're questioning, right? So what is that big question that comes out in the new setting? Yeah, who is this? And there's fear, right? They're afraid. Okay, so plot arc just might be a narrative strategy that's super helpful for this story. We've connected, and you know what? There's going to be some A's and B's that are going to look a little bit different, but we can see that this is going to be super helpful for this particular narrative. We've connected our disconnected bones into a skeletal structure, and the next step is to search for emphasis. So does anyone know the category of plot arc where emphasis is usually found? Okay, yep. The climax. It's usually, not 100% of the time, but usually in this area. It can spill over into resolution or even conflict, but generally that's where we're going to find the emphasis. So with your partner, take 2 minutes to explore the relationship between the parts of the plot arc and just come up with a possible emphasis. So you're looking at how the various parts of the plot arc connect with each other to find an emphasis. 2 minutes, and then we'll come back together. All right, let's bring it back together. Hear your observations about the relationships between the parts of the plot arc that might bring us to an emphasis. So what are some of your observations about these different parts that might bring us to a possible emphasis? What did you see? And nice and loudly for everybody too. Okay, what do you mean by surrounding context? Okay, well that's a great observation. We're gonna be talking about context first thing in the morning, and this would be a great example for that, wouldn't it? So that is definitely something you can do, is look at the context. How about the text itself right here in front of us? The 420, what are we? Whoops. 35 to 41. What are some observations?
They challenge his character. They don't wake up and say, hey, you got power. Can you help us? Can you fix it? They wake up and say, you don't care.
Okay.
They really challenge.
Okay. Okay, their lack of understanding, a challenge. Good. Lack of understanding is big here, isn't it? Some other observations.
The contrast between them freaking out and failing water and Jesus napping.
Okay, great contrast. Freaking out, Jesus napping. Okay. Did you pick up on some of those repeated words? What were the repeated words there?
Fear.
Okay, fear. Okay, their fear was changed, wasn't it? Fear of drowning to a fear of who this could be. What other repeated word did you see? Okay. So his control over the wind and the sea. All right, so you contrasted there. Yeah. Great observation. When he does speak, when he wakes up, he does speak like God would speak. Right. Okay. So his authority over the wind and the sea is not something they anticipated. Oh, right. Okay, we got a mistrust. Wow, so their eyes are really being opened, aren't they? Okay, these are great observations. And these are our starts to finding the emphasis, aren't they? So are we getting closer to a possible emphasis by compiling all these observations? I think so. I mean, we're just looking at their God's control. He speaks like God. There's mistrust. There's a misunderstanding. And all that can be, how do we detect this misunderstanding in that new setting when they ask the question, right? Who then is this? All right, so the emphasis of the story is focused on who could possibly do this, the very words of the disciples. Jesus is the one who has the authority and power over the wind and the sea. So we looked at how the various parts of the plot arc relate to each other to get to the emphasis. In our small groups, we'll have opportunities to start wrapping our heads around the plot arc, strategy, and narrative. We're going to be doing this in our small groups. And a bonus, Colleen will be giving an exposition tomorrow morning on this same text. So we'll be able to hear an example of how finding an emphasis shapes a talk. So it's just great to be introduced to it today, and then we can sit back and actually hear it tomorrow. So any questions on plot arc? Wow. It is getting late, isn't it? This is a lot for late at night. Okay. Okay, well, the main point, so when we do structure, we do structure to find the emphasis, and the emphasis is going to help us get to our main point. Does that help?
Yes.
Yeah.
No,
on your worksheets, there's a question that said, what is the emphasis that comes out of structure? That should be a sentence. This is the work that we're doing to get to the emphasis. So we're not going to say what the emphasis is right here today. But this is the work that you do to get to your emphasis, okay?
Okay, so we're not done.
You're not done yet. No, you would keep doing this until you felt comfortable. And we're going to hear that tomorrow with Colleen when she gives the exposition, that she's worked with it until she gets to a certain emphasis. And then we'll hear that tomorrow. We'll see how her emphasis shapes the talk. Anything else on plot arc? All right. So there were some other narrative strategies we mentioned that might inform the Bible teacher, but we won't be able to practice them all, don't worry, all of them. But let's move from plot arc to using some other literary feature. And we're going to do that by identifying scene changes. So this will be our last text to work up this evening. And I want you to turn to the Gospel of John, chapter 18, verses 15 to 27. And this is the courtyard. The scene is the courtyard of the high priest after Jesus is taken into custody. And I don't want you to freak out because I know that one of our small group texts, Mark 14, 51 to 72, is a similar passage. But I'm just telling you, it's different enough that we are not going to be stealing anybody's thunder by working in it in the Gospel of John tonight. So we have a few minutes to see this through on scene changes. And so get with your partner to John 18, verses 15 to 27. Wait, what I said, 18. John 18, 15 to 27. And the question is, what are the scenes and what are the scene changes? What are the scenes and how do you detect the shift? Okay, our time is going quickly, so we wanna pick up on these scenes and how they are changing. Let's come back together. So what scenes did you detect? What are the scenes? Okay, so you detected outside the courtyard. Where do you see that? Okay. What other? Outside the courtyard? Is there another scene? How did you detect a change from 7 to 18 in the courtyard? Okay. Oop. In the courtyard.
I thought Jesus.
Okay, and what would the Okay, yeah, I see into the courtyard, outside the door. Is there a scene change from where is the next?
Is it 16B where he's in or he's brought in?
16B. Yeah, I don't see that spoke. Okay. Okay, so you saw the inside outside in that first scene. Do we have any indication in the next scene that there's an inside outside? Yeah. So let's not take that all the way through just because it's from the text here. We're not sure exactly. You know, they're in the courtyard of the high priest, whether or not it's, you know, do we know that Jesus is really inside or in the outside part of that courtyard? Let's find some other scene changes, indicators. What else besides that? Okay, great. Can you give me those delineations? Okay, good. Keep going. Okay, and where that goes to where?
19 to 24.
Okay. Okay, great. Pretty clear cut. So we have the characters here as scene change indicators. Anything else that you noticed helps you detect the shift? Oh, really good. Okay. Okay. So how does that separate them out? So in 18, he's warming himself by the fire. And 25, he's warming by the fire. What's happening in the middle? Okay, it's not exactly warm, is it? In the middle here is this kind of cold inquiry, isn't it? Okay, I don't know what verse that is. Probably somewhere in between 19 and 24. Okay, good. Anything else? Any other, do you notice anything else that would help us? Well, that does help, doesn't it? Okay, great. So the paragraphs are an indication. Okay. Be really practical sometimes. All right. Who was speaking? And by? Okay, yep. That's right. And Peter and Jesus aren't the only characters there, are they? There's some other ones, the servant girl and whatnot. All right, so So we've made some multiple observations to feel out what works best, but do you see that we have similar delineations here between these two, Peter, Jesus, and Peter, the characters, and then just this warming fire over on the other side? So it appears that we have three separate units, right? 15 to 18, 19 to 24, and 25 to 27. So are we ready to start writing our talk because we found these three units? No. We want to keep observing the threads and connections between these units that we've found. So we still need the emphasis. But we did find clues in the text that suggest this is one literary unit, with this Peter's on either end and the standing and warming. So read quickly through the text again with your partner, asking, what do we learn about the characters when we read about them side by side? So what do we learn about the characters when we read about them side by side? We have Peter, Jesus, Peter. Some observations, some comparing and contrasting. And I'm going to give you, 1 minute. We are really at the end here. Okay, I didn't give you much time to wrap it up with these observations, but we need to wrap it up. So let me hear some of your observations when you did some comparing and contrasting about these characters. What do we learn about them when we look at them side by side? Yeah, excellent. Let's see, we want that. So we're looking at, you're talking about the questions that are being answered, is that right? And what they're speaking? And Peter seems to be speaking what? How's he answering those questions? Okay. In contrast to Jesus, who is open. Okay. And telling the truth, right? Good. Really good. So it's forthrightness. What else?
Peter's giving one word answers, I am not, where Jesus is expounding.
Okay, say it just a little bit louder for me.
So Peter is
okay. Answers. Yep. The brevity of the answers.
We said Peter was skulking.
He was sulking.
Skulking.
Thank you. I need you to look it up. Okay, good. Okay, I like it that you're kind of their postures, right? Okay, what else? Okay, fearful versus bold. Okay. And why was Jesus bold?
Jesus.
Jesus. Okay, so he is emerging as Jesus, isn't he? All right. Well, we've observed the bones, and we've observed the text for connections between those bones, looking for an emphasis. And with only a few minutes of work, we've had some good observations. But it seems like we're talking about this lying versus truth-telling, this faithfulness of Jesus being bold going forward, right? Being contrasted with the unfaithfulness of Peter, who's skulking. We're all going to be looking that up. So these have emerged as emphases worth following as we continue in our text preparation. So by apprehending these scene changes in John 18, 15 to 27 as they related to characters, we've been able to find structure and then ask the necessary questions for emphasis, that precious life-giving truth to emerge. So we've looked at two sample texts tonight to explore the principle of structure in narrative. In Mark 4, we used plot arc to discover a new aspect of Jesus' authority. And then in John 18, John the gospel writer uses scene changes to clue us into the priorities of the characters in the courtyard of the high priest. So we've done the exegetical work on that left side of the pathway for preparation, avoiding that broken line on the bottom of the rectangle. So the pathway is longer in this direction, isn't it? But it leads us to the life-giving truths that we and our listeners need. So the principle of structure, we can't teach the Bible well until we've apprehended the skeletal structure of the text. Every text has a structure. This structure will reveal an emphasis.